Welcome to the Emotional Balance Sheet, the go-to podcast for parents with multiple kids, especially those with twins, triplets, or more, who are navigating the maze of modern family life and personal finance. Whether you're overwhelmed by education or retirement planning, parenting dilemmas, career transitions, or trying to define your purpose and plan, we're here to guide you with empathy, encouragement, and expertise. Hosted by Paul Fenner, founder of Tama Capital, a certified financial planner and parent to four kids, including a set of triplets, our podcast is your ally in the quest for financial peace of mind, proving that money matters, but family comes first. Subscribe now and join our community of empowered parents at TamaCapital.com.
This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon for investment decisions. Clients of Tama may retain positions in the securities discussed in this podcast.
What does comprehensive financial planning even mean? At Tama Capital, it means a family office where lifestyle planning such as retirement, college, portfolio management, tax prep and planning, all are under one umbrella. But it goes beyond numbers. We focus as much on the emotional side of financial planning as we do on the financial side. We get you. We understand your challenges of building a family, business, or career, and a healthy life. We are devoted to wealth planning for families like yours because we are you. Learn how our family can help your family by visiting TamaCapital.com.
Most couples think they end up in a therapist's office to talk about money and/or sex. But it's really deeper underlying issues that couples are looking to hash out. Dr. Joy Leary is a licensed clinical psychologist and co-founder of Shaping Wealth, and is a leading voice in the psychology of money and applied behavioral finance. Joy's profound expertise lies in unraveling the profound connection that we have between money and self-esteem, and really underscores this emotional flashpoint that many people have, and most in particular, couples and parents have with money and their emotional relationships. As we point out numerous times, you cannot uncouple your financial life from your emotional life. And it's hard enough dealing with it as an individual, but when you bring in a partner or spouse and then add kids onto the mix, it could create a perfect firestorm. Please enjoy my conversation with Dr. Joy Leary. Well, Dr. Joy Leary, welcome to the Emotional Balance Sheet podcast. We have been waiting your arrival.
It is great to be here with you. Thank you so much, Paul.
I've gotten to know Joy over the past, I guess, year and a half now through the Shaping Wealth community that I'm a part of that you help co-found with Brian Portnoy, whose book is usually, always prominent right behind me. Brian and I have become good friends over the years, previous podcast guest as well. And I have been looking forward to this because you and what you do touches on the two topics that basically rule my life, psychology and money. And today we're going to talk about how those two intersect from a really kind of a focus on a marital perspective. And it all goes back to this conversation that you and I had a few months ago where you made this comment where most people think they end up in my office. And I should also say that you're a licensed psychologist. So that's why people end up in your office in therapy. But couples end up in my office thinking that they're going to talk about sex and or money. And it's really neither of those. There are so many underlying issues that support those two things, if you will. And that's what we're going to unwrap here in the next, 30 minutes or so as efficiently as we can. So that kind of sets the stage, audience, for what we're going to talk about. And I think that we're all in for a treat. So Joy, why don't we start there? Because this is the one topic we're going to focus on. is, and I see this every day in my practice as an advisor, husband and wife, partners, homosexual, heterosexual, they all come at finance differently. And why? Because we all grew up with finance differently. And so one of the things that I've really tried to work on is creating some kind of financial harmony between couples. But you're the professional when it comes to psychology and therapy. And I know us advisors run a fine line, especially in the different practices that we run, on trying not to overstep that boundary as going into professional therapy like you do. So that's why I wanted to have you on. And now I will shut up and turn the mic over to you.
Well, thank you for having me. I think this is such an important topic. So yes, often huge sources of conflict for couples, they're having trouble with intimacy, they're fighting about money. But what I explain to people, when couples are experiencing some friction about these things, or it can be disagreement about something else, it's not just about sex. It's not just about money. This isn't about math. It's about deeper issues. You know, sex and money, these are two of the most intimate parts of our lives. And to be honest with you, even a therapeutic relationship, many people would rather talk to me about what's going on in their bedroom than what is actually happening in their bank account. People get more skittish when I ask them, how much money do you make? They would rather talk about anything else but their salary. So I think part of it is it's such an emotional lightning rod, and so much of our self-esteem is on the line. So then when you have two people coming together, what you said was really important. You know, part of what creates challenges for couples is they are coming from very different places. So in order for a couple to have financial success and decide how are we going to merge our lives together, we need to have self-awareness of our own origin stories with money to understand kind of what we're bringing to the dance. What are our attitudes? What was modeled to us? What do we really believe about things like wealth? What does it mean to be rich? To be greedy? You know, those experiences we have as we're growing up, as we first become aware of money, really set the table for our financial lives for the rest of time. So understanding the differences that are going to be at play when two people are coming together and ultimately trying to marry. Okay, I've done it this way. I think it should be done this way. This is what I've seen. I've done it this way. This is what I think it should. Excuse me. This is what I think is best practice. If that isn't totally aligned, there's bound to be some friction.
You know, one of the things that, quite honestly, that I struggle with personally is you're going through therapy on my own and kind of realizing, and maybe I'll have you define what, because I'll probably refer to it multiple times, is this term called money script. And it's, from my perspective, it's kind of how I grew up with money and how it, you know, influenced me. And what I'm trying to unpack, and been trying to unpack it for years now, is I don't want to let that, the way that I grew up with money, define me. And so here I am, I'm married to Teresa, but yet I'm still struggling with my own money scripts internally myself, and then having to try to mingle that with Teresa and her background and her various money scripts. So I think right now, and I'm kind of going through this right now, where I'm really struggling on how to change my perspective while still trying to figure out how to create some level of harmony with Teresa, so we're not constantly I don't fighting or arguing, that may be too, you know, strong a word, but these discussions around money. And I think in our situation, it's pretty unique. And a lot of the audience will find this as well, because there's a lot of parents that listen to this podcast, and a lot of these parents have multiples. And I forgot to mention, you have a set of 6-year-old twins. So what kind of guidance can you help provide for somebody that's trying to get through their own money script issues, try to make changes, while in the same time dealing with trying to figure out how to and take your current life or change your current life and pair it up with your partner?
Absolutely. So I like that you brought scripts in. Something I love is writing. And I think it's really powerful thinking about our money lives as a story, because we aren't born calculators. We are born storytellers, that we gravitate to story. It's how we make meaning of life. So when we think about our own money stories that were set into motion very early on, we develop these scripts, the stories we tell ourselves about money, and we hold on to those. But I think sometimes we reach a point in life where we can step back and say, wait, is this story serving me? And, you know, when we think about financial behavior, sometimes I don't like, sometimes within the financial industry, labels get slapped on struggles people have with money as, oh, this is irrational, like you just need to check your emotions at the door. Here's the thing about human behavior, just across the board, with money, with other things. Most of us are not trying to go through our days like blowing things up. Most of us are trying to do the very best we can with what we have at any given time. And the patterns we develop were at one point probably adaptive, because we are all wired for survival and connection early on. But what I see so often happening was some of these behaviors, they worked. Maybe that's what your family needed to do to survive, but you're in a very different situation. It's almost as though your brain hasn't hit refresh. So I think when we think of all of the stories we tell ourselves about success, about security, about status, about safety, about control, about power related to money, we need to examine, is this story serving me right now? Is it helping me move toward where I want to go? Is this repeating the story helping me be the person I want to be? Or is it actually holding me back? Does it belong in a chapter early on? But I'm in a very different place in the book. So I think individually, then maybe working with an advisor, working with a mental health clinician who can help you kind of edit some of those problematic scripts. Or, you know, our brains are glitchy. And that doesn't mean we're bad or we're making mistakes, but sometimes the way we are perceiving something, the way we are just framing it, doesn't serve us. And it can be helpful to have someone on the outside helping us do some of that editing. Now, As we think about stories, then, as a couple, so I think it's really important that each individual starts with self-awareness, like I said before, about what you are bringing into this. But then part of the beauty of being in a committed partnership is looking at, okay, now we get to co-author a story. And I think when we can approach it as co-authorship, it's not me against you. Sometimes it's us against some of the challenge we are facing. But you need to find some common ground so that you can start moving together. And you can both look back and say, okay, these are some things I learned and have done early on financially, and they've actually worked well. Let's hold on to that. These are the things I experienced that I want to make sure I don't repeat. I'm tired of holding this anxiety. I don't want my kids to experience what I did. You know, there are lots of different examples and reasons that we don't want to keep repeating things. But without insight and attention, that's what we're going to keep doing. And that's why we see so many generational patterns perpetuated. So I think each individual doing that and then having conversations together about looking back, examining the present, and then really getting excited about the legacy you want to create together.
I think the one word that really resonated with me when you were talking about that is opportunity. And I don't know if couples really view it, you know, these conversations about money as an opportunity. Most couples probably think of it as dread, like, oh my gosh, like, especially yes. If there's differences between you and your spouse or your partner, and like the typical like saver versus spender.
Yeah.
But I think that's one of the things that I know that Teresa and I are trying to work on is shedding light on, you know, this is an opportunity for us to, I think the words that you use, like create our story or create a new story. And, mm-hmm. you know, going through, I feel like we're in the middle of a life transition right now with our triplets turning 13 and, you know, them not really wanting to hang out with mom and dad as we experienced on our last family vacation. And one of the things that we're trying, and I know that you've probably talked about this in one of our meetings, but I know I've read this countless times in other resources, is to try to find a financial date night, if you will. Obviously, it doesn't sound very sexy, but especially when you have a lot of kids, it's not hard. It's hard from a timing perspective too. But just to try to touch base to get on some level playing field of financial and the emotional side of it, because that's the one thing that working with people for and as an advisor for over 20 years now is that still people want to separate out the financial side from the emotional side of money. And I've never been able to do that. And I always encourage people, you have to look at it together. They there's a strong intersection between the two.
Absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's not bad. All of our money decisions on some level are emotional decisions. Now, it may come from a place of calm or confidence, or it can come from a place of intense fear, but there's always emotion there. You know, going back to what you said about opportunity, I think that's so important. Here's what I know to be true. Marriage is hard. Being a parent is hard. Doing these things well requires intention. Navigating money life is hard because of how our brains are wired, because of how the world we live in is just constantly inundating us, social comparison, and some of the baggage we maybe have from earlier in our lives with money. So when we bring marriage, parenting, and money together, like, that's a lot. But when a couple can do hard things together, there's a real opportunity to become closer and to deepen trust. So even though this may feel like a real challenge to take on, framing that as an opportunity for us to practice communication, practice having hard conversations. The healthiest people I know are adept at having hard conversations. And that happens at work, that happens with our kids, that happens in our partnerships and in relationships with the people we love. Like, that level of openness, vulnerability, courage, honesty, it's not comfortable. But those are real markers of health. And having regular conversations, like I talked about, with money, I think is important. And the more we do it, the less uncomfortable we will be, because we become more confident through competence and we become competent through practice. So something when it comes to finding a time to sit down, you can use a behavioral science trick called temptation bundling. Pair the thing that you know you need to do, you maybe don't want to do it, with something you absolutely love, and reserve that special thing exclusively for when you're doing that. So maybe say we're only going to go to our favorite restaurant after we've sat down 20 minutes to do X, Y, and Z. So you can approach and think, get creative with how you can plan this event. And I encourage couples, when you're doing a financial check-in, don't just talk about, oh, this is where we went wrong, this is where we are struggling. Be asking yourself, okay, what was a win? What is something we can celebrate? What is something that's working well that we can keep doing? And so we don't, of course, we're going to dread and probably find a very convenient reason not to do something that we absolutely hate. So find ways to infuse something that's going to be enjoyable around the experience and the conversation can go a long way.
I know your colleague at Shaping Wealth, Megan Lertz, who I know as well, I've been following her work for years as well. She's written about this too. And likewise, I think you've written about this. And by the way, audience, Joy writes a fabulous weekly article. It's called Finding Joy, and it's on Substack. And we'll be sure to check out the show notes. I'm going to put a link into that. It is well worth your time to read that every week. Joy is a phenomenal writer. So please check that out in the show notes. But one of the things I think that people struggle with, and maybe even people listening to this now, is they have a really hard time taking that first step, whether it's typically it's fear-driven. Sometimes it might be like overanalysis, paralysis, if you will. But how can a couple that's struggling either financially or emotionally find, I guess, some thread of common ground to take that first step to reach out to a therapist like yourself or an advisor like myself to help? Because again, it goes back to something you said earlier, where people would rather come to your office and talk about their sex life rather than their money life. And I think that's always been a stereotype within the financial industry, I think. And I'm sure there's some relatedness to the, you know, mental health industry, where people come in like, I'm going to talk to a complete stranger about all this emotional and sensitive issues. And I don't know, but I think there's got to be something hardwired where I feel like I'm probably going to get judged. This person's going to tell me like all these wrong things that I'm doing. And that's one of the stereotypes that I try to overcome almost every day, is to be a guide and communicate to people like, I'm more interested in you than your money.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important to recognize that, shame shuts us down. And for a lot of people, looking back at their financial life, they see missed opportunities, they label things as mistakes. When, again, if we can start to look at some of the challenges we face financially as that was just the human experience with money, like everyone is struggling and wrestling with this. I spend my days working with the top leaders in the wealth management industry. And this is hard for people when it is their job. And they have all of the knowledge in the world, and it's still challenging, and they still fight with their partners about it. And they're like, what am I doing? So I think it's just really important to normalize that instead of labeling something as a mistake. Or I think sometimes there can be fear that, oh, they're going to think I'm stupid, I don't know enough. So I think just going in, and this is true of therapy too. I explain therapy, people don't We need to shift away from looking at talking to a professional as I'm doing this because something is wrong or I'm broken. No, I'm doing this because I'm driven to bring my life to the next level. I'm not broken. I want to be better. And I recognize that to be the optimal version of who I am, to have the strongest relationship and marriage that I have, I can't do that alone. So I'm going to enlist the help of someone. You know, we don't balk when somebody decides, no, I'm going to get ripped. So I'm going to give a trainer some money. No, we celebrate that. But sometimes we don't treat financial advice or certainly mental health treatment in the same way. But the real fun in therapy is when people like dig in and do that deeper insight work. So I think shifting it that way. And if a couple is really struggling to find common ground, I think almost anyone can agree on this. Do you want to be financially successful? Do you want to have more money? Do you, importantly, want to have peace of mind? Do you want to have less anxiety and stress about your finances? Okay, now we may have very different ideas about how to get there, but if that can be a shared goal, then at least both people can be headed in the same direction.
I think that is so important because, you know, when I talk to people that have either gone through a divorce, I mean, no one ever plans on getting divorced, right?
No.
I mean, as Jim Sexton, who wrote the book How to Stay in Love, who's a divorce attorney in New York City, he's like, remember, it all started with the first date. And, you know, I think that couples forget that they have more in common than they do with not having anything in common. They have more in common than they believe, and they can do more than they believe. And somewhere that gets lost, whether it's, you know, the daily grind of careers, you know, raising of kids, you name it. There's all kinds of, you know, priorities pushing and pulling on us every day, both emotionally and financially. And I think we get lost in that. And sometimes we need to pull ourselves back. And I had this conversation with my daughter, my triplet daughter, often about how to really measure success. She's a competitive swimmer, and she's only been at it for about 3 years now. And when she gets really upset, I point out, think about where you were a year ago, where you were 2 years ago, where you were 3 years ago. You could barely get down and back, you know, in a lap. And now here you are, you know, at regionals trying to get a state cut. And I'm always reminded by this from Dan Sullivan's work, The Gap and the Gain. And I just did a podcast episode on this about measuring the right way is you have to be able to look back to be able to move forward. Look at where you were, because if you're just looking at the horizon, it never changes and you're constantly going and going. And this is a topic for our next conversation, which is funded contentment, which is lies at the heart of what you guys do at Shaping Wealth. But I think if there's a way to remind people that they have more in common than they believe, how would you go about that, Joy?
Well, I think going back to that shared desire to flourish and examining, okay, what is my relationship or my definition of success? Understanding, okay, where is that shared? Where is there a disconnect? And if a couple can't even rally around a shared broad goal of flourishing financially, start with what you don't want. Because most people can identify some anti-goals. These are some things we want to make sure do not happen. and then walk your way back from that. I think another thing, I love how you talk about success as we need to look back and use our own progress and growth as a metric of success. Another place when it comes to success that people really get tripped up is, yes, they're looking in the future more, but they're playing the comparison game. And then they are comparing their today to someone else who's at a very different point in their own journey. So the entrepreneur who's in year two, looking at the success of someone who's in year 10, being like, see, I'm a failure. You aren't seeing the mess of what that person's business was like at year two. So I think when we're looking around, we just really need to be careful about the games we are playing and how we are comparing our game to others.
So I'm looking at the clock because I want to make sure I get you out of here on time. So I've got one closing question. I'll get to that in 1 minute. But I think I'd be remiss, and we've kind of talked about this a little bit, about how kids can put a lot of pressure on families, both financially and emotionally. And I think up until this point with our kids, it's been probably more emotional, but it's becoming more financial. And part of that is what you just alluded to, this comparison of others. Obviously, social media does not help that. And I think it's a real struggle for families. And I know that in my annual reviews that I had at the end of last year, this actually got brought up multiple times, which was really interesting, which to me meant that I needed to have a conversation with somebody like you about it, because parents want to give their kids the best. But obviously everybody has certain means, like everybody's pie is only so big. Yeah. And I think a lot of parents are struggling with this drive or desire to give their kids the best of what they can financially and support them, while their kids are trying to keep up with other kids at school who may have more, and living in a very social, economically diverse area. Where I live here in Metro Detroit is really interesting, because I know that, you know, my kids go to school with kids that are potentially homeless or, you know, are, you know, on food subsidies and things like that. And then they'll have a kid walking down the street or down the hallway with $200 sneakers on. And, you know, having these conversations with our kids, you know, Teresa and I are trying to do now, I think is really, obviously it's important, but they can be really difficult conversations, because, you know, a kid can end up in tears like, well, that person has that, why can't I?
Yeah. I have so much to say. This is a really, really important topic. First, I want to go back to something you said in the beginning. Parents want to give themselves, their kids, the best. And usually parents are trying to give their kids a better life than they have. But we need to make sure we aren't confusing with giving my kids the best does not mean giving them everything. And it doesn't always mean giving them more. I think there's real value and opportunity in kids having to sit with some of that discomfort and learn about, okay, what does it feel like to know there are kids who have things that you don't, either because we can't or we choose not to spend our money that way? And what is it like for you to look around and see all we have and look at someone who we know goes home to a very, very different environment than you do? You know, there's an opportunity to talk about, you know, generosity, giving, how we choose to use our resources to help others. But this, a kid may look at something someone else has and say, I want that. Okay. What we don't want is to raise kids who go into the world who haven't developed the skills to sit with that discomfort, to sit with that envy and understand that and process that. Because when those kids, if there hasn't been a process around that, or a parent has said, oh, I'm going to keep my kid happy, which in some cases means I want to avoid my own discomfort of my kid being upset with me because I'm holding a limit. That child is then going to grow up and throw adult-sized tantrums when they get in the real world, when other people have more than them, because there will always, it doesn't matter who you are, be people who are more successful. And their success, it may not be fair how they got it. There will always be someone with more. And there's always going to be just a deep ocean of people with need who have less. So how do we learn to navigate that? How do we make choices with that? What are our values? So I think rather than parents being like, how do I do this? Again, reframing is, I have a really rich opportunity to teach valuable lessons about generosity, care, concern, values, making choices with money, and comparison.
Well, we could go on for probably hours, but I know you've got to stop. I've got to stop too. But this. Your closing remarks there leads right into my final question that I ask basically all of my guests, which is, what is the best thing about being a parent?
So many things. It is just an incredible privilege for me to get to know my kids as they grow, and see a part of myself, a part of my husband out in the world. And, you know, 6 is a really sweet age. There's just so much curiosity, and there's a sponge, and there's an innocence. But there's also just this emerging understanding and intellect. And I think one of the things, as I think about the moments that just like bring me to my knees as a parent, are when I see, even at a young age, my kids able to think about and practice generosity toward others. Those are some of the sweetest, most powerful knock me off my feet moments. And I love that.
Well, I love that question because in over 130 plus episodes, everybody's given me a different answer. And, I always look forward to people's responses on that. Well, Joy, I can't thank you enough for spending the time with us. I love our conversations that we have, every month that aren't recorded in an environment like this, but are definitely looking forward to have another conversation here in the near future.
Wonderful. Thanks for having me, Paul.
That was probably one of my best conversations I've had on these two fascinating topics that I'm always wanting to learn more about: money and psychology. And Joy touched on so many different topics, but there's a couple that really stand out to me. The first one, no surprise, seems like we talk about this often on the show, and it doesn't matter what the guest expertise is self-awareness. Self-awareness as a superpower of understanding your own and your partner's, what we call money scripts, to build a financial
future together that's much stronger than we probably realize. As we talked about, when you talk to your spouse or your partner, remember, you probably have more in common than you think. And as also I have mentioned, a conversation with Jim Sexton, divorce attorney, is remember, your relationship started with the first date. Dinner and a movie, maybe. Secondly, financial wellness is a team sport. And this is where, and I struggle with this as well, to embrace financial discussions and check-ins with your partner as a path to creating a closer bond rather than looking at it as a chore. One of the things that we talked about, and I do this personally with my wife, Teresa, is what we call temptation bundling, where we talk about things going on with the kids. We talk about financial topics in our lives, but we do it in an environment that is more enjoyable, like at dinner or going to a winery or something like that. Something that you enjoy partnering up with or pairing it up with maybe something you might not enjoy as much. But when you combine the two together, it can create some magic. If you've enjoyed this conversation, could you do me a favor? Do you know anyone else who would enjoy these types of conversations where we talk about the intersections of our emotional and financial lives? Because if you do, it's actually going to help both of us. Could you share this conversation with someone? They will think you're great because you just gave them this terrific podcast, and it helps me grow my audience. Or you can tell them to go to tamacapital.com. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Emotional Balance Sheet Podcast. Please visit tamacapital.com to follow the podcast and connect with certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, Paul Fenner of tamacapital.com. And please join us again next time on the Emotional Balance Sheet Podcast.
That's all I have for this week. We'll look forward to seeing you next time.